Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. You're talking about probably 1.5 million people, and we just clean out that whole thing. It's literally a demolition site right now. Almost everything's demolished.
President Trump calls for more than 1 million Palestinians in Gaza to be moved to neighboring Arab countries like Jordan and Egypt. As tens of thousands of displaced Palestinians return to the north of Gaza, we'll speak to Egyptian-American journalist Sharif Abdelkadous. Then to Trump's crackdown on immigrants and refugees. Colombian President Gustavo Petro at first turned back two U.S. military planes this weekend carrying deported migrants in shackles, saying they should be treated with dignity. Meanwhile, the Pentagon is sending 1,500 active-duty troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. This comes as President Trump halts the flights of thousands of refugees already approved to come to the U.S.
We have been living here for 3 years with a hope of going to America or whatever to be safe. But now, just when the President Donald Trump came on the media and told us that, no, we will not process this case, or maybe we will delay it, indeed, you will feel like betrayed.
And as the U.S. Senate confirms Pete Hegseth by one vote as defense secretary, we'll look at his extreme embrace of Christian nationalism. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump's facing accusations of supporting ethnic cleansing in Gaza after saying he wants to, quote, clean out the whole thing. Trump made the remark while speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One Saturday.
I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. You're talking about probably 1.5 million people, and we just clean out that whole thing. It's over the centuries, that's had many, many conflicts at site. And I don't know, something has to happen, but it's literally a demolition site right now. Almost everything's demolished.
Egypt and Jordan have rejected Trump's call. This is Jordan's foreign minister, Ayman Safadi.
Our stance that the two-state solution is the path to achieving peace is firm and unwavering. Our rejection of displacement is also firm and unwavering. This is not only the steadfast and unwavering position of the kingdom, but it is also a necessity for achieving the security, stability, and peace that we all desire.
Hassan Jabarin of the Palestinian human rights group Adala likened Trump's proposal to the, quote, ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, unquote. Israel's far-right finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, called Trump's proposal to clear Gaza of Palestinians a great idea. Smotrich has backed building new illegal Israeli settlements in Gaza. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Tens of thousands of displaced Palestinians are returning to North Gaza today, many for the first time in over a year, as the Israel-Hamas ceasefire enters its second week. But most Palestinians will be returning to find their homes reduced to rubble. The UN estimates 92% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed or damaged during Israel's 15-month bombardment. Hala Shala is a 19-year-old Palestinian heading back to Gaza City.
We experienced tremendous hardship from the moment we left Gaza City. We were displaced from Gaza City's Sujaiya neighborhood. After leaving, we spent 2 nights, one night in Al-Dien. Then we moved to Khan Yunis and stayed at Al-Aqsa University. We've been displaced multiple times. When we heard the war had stopped and people could return to Gaza City, we desperately wanted to go back to Gaza City because we missed our home and everyone in Gaza City. Our house was destroyed, but we're fine with living among the rubble.
On Saturday, Hamas released four female Israeli soldiers who'd been held hostage since October 7, 2023. Israel then released 200 imprisoned Palestinians, including 70 who are being forced into exile abroad. Hamas has also agreed to release three more Israeli hostages by Thursday, including a female civilian named Arbel Yehud. Meanwhile, Israel is being accused of preventing 11 doctors and nurses from the United States from leaving northern Gaza. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot dead a two-year-old Palestinian girl named Leila Mohammed Ayman al-Khatib on Saturday. The girl was eating dinner with her family in their living room when Israeli snipers fired four shots into their home near Jenin. One of the bullets hit Leila in the back of the head. Israeli forces have killed at least 16 people in or near Jenin over the past week. In Lebanon, Israeli forces opened fire on people trying to return to their homes in the south of Lebanon. Israeli forces killed at least 24 people and wounded more than 134 people. Israel had been scheduled to withdraw troops from southern Lebanon by Sunday, but the White House has announced a deal has been reached to delay the withdrawal until February 18th. In news from Washington, D.C., Secretary of State Marco Rubio has frozen almost all foreign aid coming from the State Department and USAID. But Rubio's memo exempts military funding to two countries, Israel and Egypt. Rubio's memo came as the Trump administration announced the U.S. would resume sending 2,000-pound bombs to Israel, lifting a hold put in place by the Biden administration. The U.S. Senate has confirmed Pete Hegseth as Defense Secretary. Vice President J.D. Vance cast a rare tie-breaking vote to confirm Hegseth, the former Fox News host and combat veteran who faced accusations of rape, spousal abuse, excessive drinking on the job, and financial mismanagement. Three Republican senators joined Democrats in opposing him. Former Senate leader Mitch McConnell, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins. Ahead of the vote, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine said there were many more qualified people for the post.
There are hundreds of them without the personal baggage of sexual assault claims that have been settled, of allegations of spousal abuse that have been testified to, of allegations of drunkenness on the job and fiscal mismanagement that are the subject of a very extensive report written by non-anonymous co-workers.
We'll look at Pete Hegseth's embrace of extreme Christian nationalism later in the broadcast. The Senate has also confirmed South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem to head the Department of Homeland Security. The final vote, 59-34, with seven Democrats supporting her. John Fetterman, Maggie Hassan, Tim Kaine, Andy Kim, Gary Peters, Gene Shaheen, and Alyssa Slotkin. On Friday night, President Trump fired a dozen independent inspectors general across federal agencies. The move appears to violate a federal law that requires the president to give Congress 30 days' notice before firing an inspector general confirmed by the Senate. A group of House Democrats wrote a letter to Trump demanding he reverse the purge, saying it's, quote, antithetical to good government and undermines the proper stewardship of taxpayer dollars, unquote. The White House has announced the government of Colombia has agreed to begin accepting flights of deported immigrants after a dramatic standoff between the two countries. On Sunday, the Colombian president, Gustavo Petro, turned back two U.S. military planes carrying deported people, saying immigrants should be treated with dignity. President Trump then imposed new tariffs and sanctions on Colombia. Petro responded with retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports, but within hours, the White House announced a deal had been reached. The standoff with Colombia comes as the Trump administration announced nearly 1,000 people were arrested Sunday as federal agencies carried out immigration raids in Chicago and other cities. In Chicago, agents with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, were assisted by the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, and the U.S. Marshals Service. The Washington Post reports the Trump administration wants every ICE field office to make at least 75 immigration arrests per day as part of a new quota system. Local communities are pushing back. On Friday, school officials in Chicago refused to allow agents into an elementary school. School officials at first thought the agents were from ICE, but they were actually from the U.S. Secret Service. The Justice Department has announced a limited enforcement of a 1994 law known as the FACE Act that protects abortion clinics and people seeking abortion care. The Trump administration says it will only prosecute individuals who unlawfully block access to abortion clinics and reproductive health centers in extraordinary circumstances, such as killing someone or causing serious bodily or property harm. Trump also pardoned 23 people convicted under the law. Also on Friday, Trump reinstated and expanded the so-called Mexico City policy, also referred to as the global gag rule, which cuts off U.S. aid to any overseas group that provides abortion services, information, or advocacy. South Korean prosecutors have charged impeached President Yoon Suk-yeol with insurrection after his failed attempt to impose martial law in December, which plunged South Korea into political turmoil. The insurrection charge could lead to a sentence of life imprisonment for Yoon or even the death penalty, though South Korea has not carried out an execution in decades. In the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, M23 rebels say they've seized Goma, the capital of North Kivu province. UN Chief Antonio Guterres called on Rwandan forces to immediately withdraw from the DRC and end its support for M23 fighters, while the Congolese government called Goma's capture a declaration of war by Rwanda. Fighting across the Congo-Rwanda border has also been reported. Some 400,000 people have been forced to flee their homes in eastern Congo since the start of the year, as M23 fighters advance towards Goma, compounding an already disastrous humanitarian situation. Over the weekend, the UN moved to evacuate its staff in the area after 13 UN peacekeeper soldiers were killed fighting the M23. Following an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council Sunday, Congolese Foreign Minister Therese Kayikwamba Wagner called the unfolding situation in her country one of the, quote, darkest periods in recent history, and called for the UN Security Council to sanction Rwanda and impose an embargo on the exploitation of natural resources.
Since January 6, 2025, these illegal forces have intensified their attacks, taking over strategic localities such as Katale, Masisi, displacing millions of civilians and destroying vital infrastructure and committing massive human rights violations. These acts are not only attacks against the people of the Congo, but also against the fundamental principles that govern peaceful coexistence between the nations.
In Sudan, an estimated 70 people were killed by a drone strike on a hospital in North Darfur's besieged city of El Fasher. The World Health Organization says the Saudi Teaching Maternal Hospital, the last functioning hospital in the area, was packed with patients receiving care when the attack occurred. Sudan's government blamed the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, for the massacre. Prior to the assault, RSF had given a 48-hour ultimatum to the Sudanese armed forces to leave El Fasher, warning of escalating attacks. The hospital attack also came a day after two U.S. lawmakers said the United Arab Emirates is continuing to provide arms to the RSF, which the Biden administration recently accused of committing genocide in Sudan. Over 14 million people have been displaced by the war, which started in April 2023. 3 million of those have become refugees, most of them crossing the border to South Sudan and Chad. In news from Germany, the world's richest man, Elon Musk, took a break from advising Donald Trump Saturday to give a surprise virtual address to the far-right AfD party. That's Alternative for Germany. Musk's appearance came just days after he sparked controversy for twice giving a Nazi salute at a Trump inaugural event. Among other things, Musk told attendees it's time to move on from past guilt, an apparent reference to Nazism and the Holocaust.
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that I'm very excited for the IFD. It's good to be proud of German culture, German values, and not to lose that in some sort of multiculturalism that dilutes everything.
The U.S. Air Force says it will continue using an educational video about the Tuskegee Airmen, the first Black Air Force members, and another video about the first women Air Force members. After the videos were briefly pulled from the Air Force curriculum, triggering widespread backlash. The reversal comes after the videos were put under review as part of the Trump administration's order to halt all efforts to promote DEI. That's diversity, equity, and inclusion. And Switzerland is facing widespread criticism for arresting and detaining the Palestinian-American journalist Ali Abu Nima of the online publication Electronic Intifada. The UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Opinion and Expression, Irene Khan, called his arrest shocking news. The UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, Francesca Albanese, wrote, quote, "The climate surrounding freedom of speech in Europe is becoming increasingly toxic, and we should all be concerned," she said. Ali Abu Nima was arrested ahead of a speaking event in Zurich. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Tens of thousands of displaced Palestinians are returning home to the north of Gaza for the first time since they were forced to flee their homes at the start of Israel's war on Gaza over a year ago. A river of people that stretched for miles walked north along Gaza's coastal road Monday, carrying what's left of their possessions. Most Palestinians will be returning to find their homes reduced to rubble. The UN estimates 92% of homes in Gaza have been destroyed or damaged over the last 16 months. President Trump's facing accusations of supporting ethnic cleansing in Gaza after saying he wants to, quote, clean out the whole thing. Trump called for Egypt and Jordan to take in Palestinians living in Gaza while speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One Saturday. He told the reporters he'd spoken to King Abdullah of Jordan.
I said to him, I'd love you to take on more, because I'm looking at the whole Gaza Strip right now, and it's a mess. It's a real mess.
So you'd like Jordan to house people from Gaza?
To take people. I'd like Egypt to take people. I'm meeting with, I'm talking to General El-Sisi tomorrow, sometime, I believe. And I'd like Egypt to take people, and I'd like Jordan to take people. I mean, you're talking about probably 1.5 million people. We just clean out that whole thing. It's, you know, it's over the centuries, that's had many, many conflicts at site. And I don't know, it's something has to happen, but it's literally a demolition site right now. Almost everything's demolished.
Egypt and Jordan have both rejected Trump's suggestion and emphasized a two-state solution ensuring Palestinian statehood is the only way forward. Hamas and displaced Palestinians in Gaza also rejected the idea of being forced out of Gaza. This is Magdi Sedam, a Palestinian waiting to return to northern Gaza.
The call by the U.S. president is completely rejected. Completely. Completely. If he thinks he will forcibly displace the Palestinian people, this is impossible. Impossible. The Palestinian people firmly believe that this land is theirs. This soil is their soil. No matter how much Israel tries to destroy, break, and to show people that it had won, in reality, it did not win. It destroyed and ruined things and showed the people that it is a failed state.
Trump's suggestion that more than 1 million Palestinians should be moved out of Gaza to neighboring Arab states weren't his first controversial comments on Gaza since returning to office. Shortly after his inauguration last week, Trump said he's, quote, not confident the ceasefire will remain in place. He said Gaza appeared to be a, quote, massive demolition site that should be rebuilt.
You know, Gaza's interesting. It's a phenomenal location on the sea. Best weather. You know, everything's good. It's like some beautiful things could be done with it, but it's very interesting. But some fantastic things could be done with Gaza.
For more on reactions to President Trump's calls to, quote, clean out Gaza, we're joined by the Emmy and Polk Award-winning Egyptian-American journalist Sharifa Belkadous. He works with Drop Site News and spent years reporting from Egypt as well as from Gaza and the West Bank. He was correspondent on Al Jazeera's Fault Lines documentary, The Night Won't End, Biden's War on Gaza, and did a Polk Award-winning documentary on the killing of the Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Sharif, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you here. So these comments of Trump, the last ones echo his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who had said in the last year that Gaza is great beachfront property, talking about it as a kind of real estate deal. Trump, most recently on Air Force One on Saturday night, saying that the more than a million Palestinians should be moved to Egypt and Jordan, that he spoke to the Jordanian king. Meanwhile, Jordan and Egypt talk about their responses, and most importantly, the response of Palestinians.
Well, both Jordan and Egypt have rejected this, and they've done so since the beginning of this genocidal assault. You know, these comments were welcomed by the far-right ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, who said, you know, this would be the voluntary emigration that they've been dreaming about for Palestinians to be forcibly displaced outside of Gaza and for them to rebuild Jewish settlements in Gaza. I think yes, we have to acknowledge what's happening today, which are these incredible scenes of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Palestinians who have withstood an unprecedented genocidal assault, returning back to the north. We spoke at Dropsite to Mustafa Barghouti just a few days ago, and he said the return of forcibly displaced Palestinians to the north will be the ultimate defeat of Israeli plans, because it means that the goal of ethnic cleansing did not materialize. Let's remember what happened. If we go back to October 7th, 2023, when Benjamin Netanyahu took to the airwaves and declared war on Gaza, he said, leave now, to the 2.3 million Palestinians who are living in Gaza. Just a few days later, we saw this shocking directive for all 1.1 million Palestinians who are north of Wadi Gaza to flee to the south. And we saw this unbelievable, unprecedented aerial bombing campaign, and many people forcibly displaced to the south, many of them to Rafah in the beginning. And let's not forget that at the time, Western governments, including the United States government under the Biden administration, were trying to persuade Egypt to take in hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, displace them in northern Sinai, offering economic incentives. There's reporting that shows that this was taking place. Egypt rejected it at the time, but more importantly, Palestinians rejected this. And then we saw them build what's called the Netzarim Corridor, which bisected Gaza. This was a 6 or 7 kilometer wide strip of land. They completely depopulated, forcibly displaced, ethnically cleansed that area, destroyed almost all of the buildings there, set up military bases. And this was essentially, reporting shows in Haaretz, this was called a kill zone. Any man, woman, or child unarmed would enter. It's unclear where the border was of the Netzarim Corridor. They would be shot and killed. And this was essentially the place that divided Gaza. Once you crossed there, you could not go back. We saw in October also a concentrated extermination campaign in the very north of Gaza, in Jabalia, Jabalia refugee camp, in Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia, where they completely did not allow any aid in, and then very systematically started attacking these towns and cities and forcing people out on essentially what were death marches to the south across the Netzarim corridor and back. And, you know, despite all of this, people withstood, they remained on their land, and now we're seeing these incredible scenes of people returning home. And to think that, Trump can just say they should move to Egypt or Jordan, I think, you know, is preposterous. And we're seeing right now that this is kind of an ultimate defeat of the plans of ethnic cleansing that have dated back to the 1950s for Israel.
So I wanted to go to that quote of Jared Kushner made months ago. That's Trump's son-in-law and former advisor weighing in on Israel's war on Gaza, saying Israel should move Palestinians out of the besieged territory, which he said contains very valuable waterfront property, making the remarks during an event hosted by the Middle East Initiative at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government.
In Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up, livelihoods. You think about all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and into all the munitions. If that would have gone into education or innovation, what could have been done? And so I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. But I don't think that Israel has stated that they don't want the people to move back there afterwards.
So that's pretty amazing comment. Invaluable beachfront property. Earlier today, I was watching the Palestinian attorney Diana Bhutu on Al Jazeera when asked about what Trump said. You know, I think all agree it does look like a demolition zone. There's no question about it. How can Palestinians live there? And she said, okay, if there's that question, rather than moving them to neighboring Arab states like Egypt and Jordan, what about moving them home? She said 80% of the people of Gaza come from places in Israel.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Gaza has long been a site of resistance in historic Palestine and long been a place that Israel wants to ethnically cleanse, because it is the largest concentration of Palestinian refugees in historic Palestine. So there's always been a rest of place. These people who, 80% of them or their descendants, want to return to their homes, which are mostly the towns and villages around Gaza. And like you said, this is now, they are returning in these really incredible scenes that we're seeing right now.
I mean, but this is a flood of humanity.
People hugging who haven't seen, they've been separated from their family members, from mothers and fathers, separated from their children for 15 months, and they're reuniting for the first time. They never thought they would see each other again. But they are returning to, as you said, a devastated landscape. Nearly the entire, every house has been destroyed or badly damaged. People, the government authorities are telling people to bring their tents with them. There are not even enough tents for people to set up on the rubble of their homes. And as we've been seeing in other parts as well, while Israel has violated the ceasefire nearly every single day, killing Palestinians, especially in Rafah, the death count, the official death count, has been also shooting up since the 19th, when the ceasefire went into effect, because dozens of bodies are being recovered from under the rubble. And so, you know, I'm afraid we're going to see a lot of this as people search for their loved ones as they're returning to this devastated landscape. But they're determined not to leave their land, and many of them will set up tents on the rubble of their homes.
And then we go to the West Bank and what's happening there. We just spoke to Mariam Barghouti. You wrote a piece with her for Dropsite. If you can talk about the intensification of violence against Palestinians there.
Well, essentially what we saw soon after the ceasefire went into effect, a war on the West Bank, initially dubbed the Iron Wall. All of these things had been taking place already, attacks on Jenin, closures of checkpoints and so forth, but a massive escalation of this, to the likes of which we haven't seen since 2002, an invasion of Jenin. Right now, they are demolishing the refugee camp, not just with bulldozers as we've seen in the past. They are actually detonating, the way they have done in Gaza, parts of this. 2,000 families have already been displaced. Across the West Bank, there was usually around 700 military checkpoints. Now there's close to 1,000. They've all closed down. Cities have been closed off from each other. People can't leave their towns and villages to go to school, to go to work. They're separated from each other. And so this is, they're laying siege to the West Bank. And a lot of what we show in the reporting and what has been said was that this was a trade-off that Netanyahu, trying to convince his ministers like Smotrich and Ben-Gavir to sign on to the Gaza ceasefire plan, that they would launch this kind of unprecedented military assault on the West Bank.
There's so much to talk about, but I wanted to go back to Egypt. While they're saying no to Egyptians being displaced into, while they're saying no to Palestinians being displaced into Egypt, the Egyptian government has renewed its judicial harassment of Hossam Bakhat, according to Human Rights Watch and other groups. Hossam Bakhat, one of Egypt's leading human rights advocates, executive director of the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, also worked as an investigative journalist for the independent media outlet Madamasser. Earlier this month, the Supreme State Security Prosecution charged Bakhat with, quote, involvement with and financing a terrorist group and spreading false news. He was then released on bail, the charges following the release of a report by Bakhat's group about dire detention conditions in a prison in Egypt. Now, we've interviewed Hossam Bakhat many times on Democracy Now. We saw him in Sharm el-Sheikh at the UN Climate Summit. You were there too, Sharif. He was a person everyone rallied around, even as they talked about the freeing of Alaa Abdel Fattah. Let's talk first about Hossam, then finally about Alaa.
Well, Hossam Bakhet is one of Egypt's leading human rights advocates and was banned from travel for 8 years. We had him on Democracy Now! Just last year. He was allowed to travel for the first time in 8 years as a result of a long-standing case targeting NGOs in Egypt. And he had asset freezes as well on his bank accounts. And, yeah, we just saw a few days ago that he was dragged into state security prosecution, interrogated for 6 hours, mostly focused on a report that his group, the Egyptian Initiative for Personal Rights, put out about the conditions in prisons, a particular prison, where prisoners have started a hunger strike on January 4th to protest things like lack of exercise. They're kept in their cells for 23 hours a day, reductions in the amount of food they're getting, in how long visitations are. And so because EIPR put out this report, Hossam was then hauled in and accused on charges of terrorism and broadcasting false news.